Welcome to Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. I'm so excited to share with you the conversation that we had over on Clubhouse today. This is part of a six-part series focused on NADA 2021 and the inability for us to gather personally. So what we wanted to do is create a platform and a space for us to connect as personally as possible. Some incredible panelists, people in our industry that are pushing forward with innovation. Hope that you're encouraged by the conversation today. Just as a note, if you're not familiar with Clubhouse, it's an open forum platform where panelists, speakers, and audience members are all involved in the conversation. So you'll hear potential of some people talking through each other or questions being asked by those audience members, and hope that you are encouraged by the messages and the innovation and the thoughts that are shared today. So without further ado, let's head over to the broadcast. Again, this is NADA Plus Clubhouse. The NADA 2021 is unfortunately and sadly a virtual event this year, but we're going to do everything we possibly can this week to increase the personal connection, hear from people across the table, do as much as we can to, as NADA and as our virtual events are so famous for, those lunch meetings and those dinner meetings and those little passes in the expo hall that we get to ideate and dream and advance our business and meet people and connect. And so we're going to connect here on Clubhouse this week. We're going to be running six sessions. This is the first of those six, every single day at 12 Eastern and 4 p.m. Eastern. We've got over 20 incredible moderators that are coming to us, and they are going to get to share their knowledge, answer questions, and also converse with an incredible industry, people that are leading innovation right here on Clubhouse. So I can't wait to share these rooms with you. Again, my name is Kyle Mountseer. I am the host of Contagious Podcast and Marketing and Business Development Director for Nelson Auto Group. And up here with me, we have Chip Perry, who is the current CEO of A to Z Sync, a software pressing forward with single point of contact sales, and the former CEO of both TrueCar and Auto Trader. We also have Joe Chura. Joe Chura is the founder and CEO of Dealer Inspire and a constant pursuer of pushing innovation within our industry, specifically digitally and with dealers. And then lastly, on the moderator panel, we have Tim Cox. And Tim is the co-founder of Car Now and the senior vice president of sales currently, and is also one that is driving toward innovation and attempting to pull people in as dealers push to have a better consumer and employee interaction. I've already enjoyed so much of the interaction. As we get started, I want to just give each of these incredible moderators the opportunity to speak and give us some encouragement and go from there. So if you will, just a couple things, Chip, Joe, and Tim, and we'll go in that order. And give me one, what you're excited about, the main thing that you're excited about in our industry right now. Two, just a little bit of recap on where we've been in the last year, just as Rhett did it at the first opening session, and what you've seen in the incredible industry that we're in over this last year. And then lastly, and maybe you can lead it with this first, what you had for breakfast today. Because we're going to have fun in Clubhouse. So without further ado, Chip, if you will, if you're willing, take it away.
Sounds great, Kyle. Thank you. What I'm excited about, and I appreciate having the chance to be here very much for this esteemed panel. What I'm really excited about is the industry's enthusiasm and progress toward improving the customer experience. And I think that the rallying cry that we can all use to stay focused on this was the Super Bowl ad that was run by Vroom.com. Did everybody see that ad? It was, it was the most stark, the most negative, the most antagonistic, the most acidic view of the car dealer purchasing experience that I've ever seen on national television. And there have been some pretty bad portrayals of car buying in a traditional mode. So I think that when we see that, it ought to give us inspiration to keep improving the customer experience. Where we've been, I think, in the last year, COVID has pushed the envelope in some ways, but in some ways, more things change, the more they remain the same. There has been, a fall back toward normal car buying away from remote. As far as I can tell, that's what my data shows. I'm interested in hearing whether other people are seeing, you know, different experiences, but compared to, you know, high COVID of, you know, 30-40% remote deliveries, you know, now we're seeing less than 10%, single digit. So things seem to be going back to normal, but you know, there's an awareness that digital retailing and online shopping and getting ready to buy the car online needs to be advanced. So I think we've come a long way, but COVID hasn't produced some of the permanence of behavioral change that people were expecting. And for breakfast, I'm not much of a breakfast eater. I just I kind of have a tea and an energy bar. I'm not very interested in that respect. Well, my mother used to say that, hey, it's the most important meal of the day, and I have unfortunately religiously broken her rule all these years. God rest her soul.
You're just flying with the trends. Intermittent fasting for the win, right? Yeah. Thanks, Chip. Appreciate it. Joe, yeah.
Hey, Chip. I think that was derived from marketers back in the day, from what I've read and learned. By the way, that breakfast is the most important meal. I'll start there since I started down that journey. I have a post-workout smoothie every day religiously, just with some protein, blueberries, bananas, and some almond milk. So that's it. A little boring, but getting that protein in early is important. The thing I'm most excited about right now is connecting the power of the Cars.com audience to solutions. And what I mean by that is Cars.com gets 25 million unique visitors on a monthly basis. And when you can connect the visitor journey from Cars.com to dealership solutions, I think we have an advantage there. And what that will do is provide, I think, a very beneficial path to what we're all calling the cookieless future. And I'm actually really excited about that. I know people are nervous. How are we going to market to these customers? And what are we going to do when that happens? But the ability to have a strong customer base is going to be even that much more important. And I think, and you'll hear me saying this, I don't know if it's been said yet, but I do believe the phone number is the new social security number, tying the customers from one experience to another, and really bridging their journeys across all solutions. So you're looking at one holistic platform versus many. So that in a nutshell is what I'm excited about. And I think what that'll do is two things: provide a less friction consumer experience, but something that's overlooked is a less friction dealer experience, where dealers can do more with less, and they don't have to have 20 different vendors for 20 different solutions, and you have a one-stop shop with our company. Hey, there's work to be done to get there for sure, but I think, again, having an audience is one of the most important and sometimes the most underrated thing you can have. What I've seen in the last year was very profound. I've seen an acceleration of technology, of understanding what dealers can do. I've seen you know, a lot of dealers do better, for lack of better words, in the sense of understanding what the customer needs are and providing the ultimate flexibility. I've also seen some dealers not want to change. And as I talked on CBT News recently, I really believe to combat the rooms of the world, we need to ensure that change is happening in the places where it's not. I know from experience that there's many dealers that provide and have provided a frictionless experience for many years. I personally know them, I'm friends with them. And, you know, there's, without even any technology being used, They back, you know, over a decade ago, they were delivering cars 100% online, and that was simply through a conversation. And that's the most important thing here, is that yes, Tim and myself and Chip, we're building cool technology that's going to enable customers and dealers to create better experiences and to have better experiences. But the bottom line is, it comes down to communication. Comes down to, how can you interact with the customer in a way that is beneficial to them? And I've seen that grow leaps and bounds. And I think because of COVID, the industry accelerated itself more in the last year than it would have done in the last five. So I'm really proud of that. I think there's a way to go, but really what it comes down to for the next year is flexibility for customers and dealers. And by the way, Kyle, thanks for having me on. Super pumped that you stepped up to this. And I think, you know, a forum like Clubhouse is perfect for NADA, because it allows us all to have a conversation versus having a stage and talking at someone. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, of course, I'm excited about it. Tim, what you got?
First of all, let me just say that I am definitely the low man on the totem pole here. Kyle, you're one of the best and brightest in our space, and Chip Perry doesn't know this, but he is truly a hero of mine. He handles everything with excellence, everything with character, everything with humility, and I've watched him from afar. And you know, when someone once said that the true measure of a leader is not watching what they do, but what people do because of them. So Chip, thank you for being a rock in our industry for so many years. And then Joe Chura, although we are competitors, Joe Chura is a friend, and we have been walking in lockstep, especially this past year with certain OEM programs. And it wasn't about attribution, it was about serving the dealer. So I also have, before we even get started, the utmost respect for Joe Chura. He has just done a fabulous job and is also a pillar making change in the automotive space. So thank you guys, and thank you, Kyle, for putting this together. You know, I'm excited about, quite frankly, Clubhouse. I'm excited about, I sat behind the desk for almost 20 years. I'm excited about, you know, being able to see what's really happening in our industry, and being able, instead of once a quarter, going to with my financial statement to my 20 group with 19 of my peers, you know, having real conversations on what's happening on the ground. You know, the problem with going last is, just to concur a lot of what Chip has said, you know, with the vroom commercials and things out there, how we as a dealer body, I'm excited about seeing change for myself. I'm excited about, you know, David Kane, who I think we all know, mentioned on a podcast we had about 6 or 7 months ago. He said, experience is the new brand. And to Joe, your point, there are a lot of dealers that are working on their experience. Again, before a lot of these technologies were out there, I think in 2021, a seamless experience wherever the customer's at, on Google My Business and Apple Business Chat, and seeing the customers right where they are. And Joe hit it out of the park when he talked about communication. You know, fancy widgets don't sell cars, conversations do. So I think it's important that we unpack that. What are we saying? What breath are we casting? I always tell my team all the time, no breath is better than bad breath. So you know, what are we conveying to our customers? And then to Joe's final point, quite frankly, just making it simple for, that's our, you know, that's what we're talking about this year with our dealer partners. You know, how can we serve you? How can we make it simple? You know, you've got 93 dashboards and 4,800 freaking passwords. Man, how can we make it simple to where you can communicate the same breath every single time to your customer? And then when they come in the store, to Chip's point, you know, with the digital space, those numbers and those studies are real. You know, facts trump feelings. People are still going into the dealership, but they are still doing a lot of work online. The thing I love about cars and Dealer Inspire is that I listened to Darren Haygood at AAAS with Brian Pasch not too long ago, and his numbers that he said were nearly identical to what we were seeing. And to see, you know, that moving, and he was talking about, you know, deals started online, where at least the majority of that process is done online. when they go into the dealership and they have a better experience, those vehicles are between $250, in some cases $400 higher PVR than the rest. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. And quite frankly, because of NADA, everybody has their pitch in their bag, right? There's no booths, you know, there's no, you know, everybody's got something new. I think the end-to-end talk, right, with the DR providers is now. But what does that really mean? I'd love to unpack that today. Knowing that when people are talking about, well, you know, we're end-to-end, well, pretty much everybody's end-to-end right now. But when you're looking at in every state of the union, your MV1, your tag and title, your power of attorney, none of that can be signed digitally, legally anyway. So how does that work in? So there's a lot of great thought. There's a lot of brilliant minds that are even coming into this room right now. And I'm really excited to, humbled, number one, to be on the stage with these giants in the industry. But just want to just can't wait to hear the feedback. So thank you. Oh, and for breakfast, like Joe, as I'm getting older, I am now skinny fat. My arms got skinny and my belly got fat. So I keep it pretty simple as I try to get back in shape to just oatmeal and bananas this morning. So just oatmeal and bananas. Thank you, Kyle.
I love it. I love it. Thanks for answering the breakfast question. I know that wasn't the one everyone was excited about, but maybe everyone in the audience was. So I'm going to go ahead and in just a second after I ask this question, and I'm going to probably throw it to Chip first. I'm going to go ahead and turn hand raising on. So if you do have questions for the panel, please make sure that you've got that lined out, and we'll try and keep this flowing as much as possible. We're going to honor everyone's time and keep this to about 45, 50 minutes at the most. But I want to ask Chip. Chip, you know, when Tim says that we've got to have this seamless experience from online to in-store, and when you're saying that there's an interest from the dealer body in general to improving the customer experience, and I think that you're right in that the keyword interest is there. There's kind of this keyed up, like kind of looking around, what is everybody else doing? What are we gonna do about this? How are we gonna get there quicker? I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, moving from interest to action and what it's gonna take to go there.
Well, thank you, Kyle. I think that's a great question because, you know, the industry, it feels, you know, like two fundamentally different feelings. It feels positive because, you know, despite the challenges of COVID and the supply constraints from the OEMs, dealers had a good year in 2020. And we start the year 2021 with margins being pretty good and the dealers feeling like they're in good shape, generally speaking. Then on the other hand, you can look at all of the threats and challenges to the franchise system that are being felt. Pressures from the OEMs, pressures from ongoing margin compression, and cost increases affecting dealer profitability that are driving the need to create some fundamental change in how cars are retailed in America. So, you know, on the one hand, there's this feeling of kind of like, hey, things are pretty good. And then on the other hand, there's this feeling of, hey, we're kind of teetering on the edge of disaster here. You know, there's talk about the retail system becoming a dinosaur. But we don't see a lot of dealers making a headlong rush to make major changes in their retail customer experience. Why is that? So I wonder that a lot myself. At the company I'm working for here in Denver, A to Z, and what we're trying to do is help dealers reinvent themselves from the inside out by creating a whole new kind of in-store experience which attacks the fundamental problem with the traditional process, which is the fact that multiple people are involved, multiple steps, time-consuming, stressful, inconvenient, convoluted, complex, all those descriptors, although there are many great dealers in America who do the best job they can within the constraints of a complex, convoluted, traditional process. You know, they please as many customers as they can, they do the best they can, but they still dramatically sub-optimize compared to what an ideal state of automotive retail might be, in which a car is sold by one person, very simply, conveniently, transparently. And so what we're working on here in Denver is a system, along with training and consulting, to help dealers adopt a new way to do business. We call it one-person selling. We're very excited about what we're seeing from the clients we are working with who have adopted this change. It is a lot of work. It's not simple, but it's not brain surgery either. And on the other end of the change, the transformation, is a dealership where the customer is dramatically more satisfied. They get out of the store in 50% of the time or less than the traditional approach. The dealer salespeople have much better jobs. They make more money, they sell more cars, and it's a richer experience, and the dealership can attract better people into those roles. And then thirdly, the dealership performs really well. Their customer satisfaction rises, their word of mouth rises, they tend to see much higher sales even in soft markets. We posted some case studies on our website recently that document the facts of how much better dealers are performing with a one-person sales model than they were before with the traditional model. So, and then the biggest fear that dealers often have is loss of F&I income. And what we've learned, and our clients have learned, is by having one person handle the entire transaction, actually through better rapport being created and knowledge and relationship being established, more F&I product gets sold actually rather than less. And then obviously there's the improved efficiency of the dealership with much less F&I expense. So that's what we're working on. And I'd like to ask the panel, why they believe, that more dealers aren't more aggressive about trying to move their in-store customer experience into the modern era of what people expect, a convenient, efficient process of buying a car. I'm kind of curious about what other people think, because I have my own opinions about what the hurdles are, but anybody else, I'd be curious about your opinions. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to say that, we talk to, and I know Joe does, everybody on the panel talks to dealers every day, and especially in the climate coming off a year that started with fear that ended up a lot stronger than most expected. It's tough to tell people or say, hey, listen, you need to learn how to fish when the fish are jumping in the boat. So I think there's a lot of that. I think to change that is taking, not necessarily case studies, but just stories of like, again, Darren Haygood and myself and others were sharing in different avenues on higher PVR, because it is proven that when there is less friction, or as our friend Bob Lanham likes to say, frictionless, consumers respond. So it's just getting those out and making it easier. If we can, whether it's software or a process, if we can go to our dealer body as an automotive industry and present them an easier solution, I think that's when we'll see adoption. But again, you've got most people that have been behind the desk for decades and they say, I'm doing well and I had one of the best years that we thought we had, so why do I need to change anything? So that's what we, at least myself, I'm hearing over and over again.
Yeah, I bet I'll add to that too, Tim, with almost the same comment, that the best time to fix the roof is when the sun's shining. And right now, and it has been shining, despite all of the adverse kind of initial reactions from COVID and dealerships having to furlough and going through all that stuff. And at the end, they had a really good year. But I would say that, in the 80s, Kodak had a pretty good year as well. And they totally missed the boat on digital adoption. And right now, you can clearly see what's happening in our space. The large dealer groups are creating aggregated portals of inventory. And they're going to, and it's happening, creating a more seamless experience for consumers. So it needs to change. It needs to constantly evolve. And I think in some pockets, like I had mentioned a few minutes ago, dealers are already doing that. But because things are good now is why there hasn't been enough change from every dealer across the board. I think, again, in pockets there has been, but you can easily point to examples. And I know that, Jim on CBT, he had some good examples of, he's in the space, he's going to dealerships in Atlanta, his hometown, having conversations, wants the prices of a vehicle and can't even get it. And the desk manager's walking, the salesperson's walking back to the desk manager, going back and forth. No technology in the world can solve that. That is a process improvement opportunity. And you have to go in and almost experience it as a consumer to really kind of see what's going on. It's almost like you got to zoom out. And you can't do that with your employees. You have to do it with other people that are unbiased. So I would say that, in the end, it's because things are going well, Chip, that change is reluctant to happen in certain pockets, but other dealers are realizing that. And I do really believe that the ones that are catching on are going to be the ones that, we're talking about in the next few years.
It's great to see Matt Lawford here in this group. He's a very progressive Hyundai dealer near Atlanta. Matt, what's your opinion on this?
Hey, Chip, and Joe and Tim, and you guys are, I have to say, y'all are my three favorite people, especially in this technology industry that really support the dealer. And I wanted to piggyback off what you said earlier, Chip, with the Vroom, and then the whole group is talking about why it's hard to change. And there's a lot of, I think, underlying issues that haven't been solved. And one of them is the OEM. And with the OEM that talks about wanting to be the dealers to be progressive, the problem is they keep incentivizing old school mentality with facility changes and facility upgrades and things like that. And I know with Hyundai, everything's about the facility versus what you're investing in with technology. And then I think there's a second issue where most dealers like myself, we don't have the budget to create our own technology, so we rely on great platforms like Tim's Car Now or Joe with Dealer Inspire, True Car, etc. And we're limited to what those programs and widgets can provide, but you're still not getting all banks getting away from wet signatures. We're still not getting some technologies that can really integrate. So when the GM or sales manager has a choice whether to use something that's proven and hasn't broken, and the OEM really does support it financially, they're going to stay a little more old school versus trying to go down the digital retail tool that I think is the right way. And I think we need a lot of support on the vendor partnership sides to help alleviate some of those problems.
Yeah, I'll just say, I think, and to Chip's point here, last year I would call like the year of digital retailing, and the much harder change management, especially what Joe is talking about from a process standpoint, is showroom retailing. It's a much bigger undertaking than plugging in a widget. We all want the iPhone to come in and make us. Let's just take it to, and Joe will be able to take this, but we all want the iPhone to be able to take the Apple Watch to come in, and all of a sudden we're 50 pounds lighter. But it takes your personhood adopting a process to make you 50 pounds lighter if that's what you're after, and I think that's where we've gotten the rub on there. I want to be, Jason was the first one to the stage, and Zach, I will get to you. I know you've unmuted it a couple of times, but Jason, what do you have for us? What question?
Hey guys, I guess, two things. One, to reference kind of what was being talked about, like I coach soccer in Tennessee, and I've had groups of kids, and I think that in my mind, like the best way to kind of comprehend some of this stuff is the fact that I have top players on my team and I have bottom players. And I feel like the OEMs are very similar. Like, you know, if I make it too advanced, the bottom players can't keep up with the top players. But at the same time, if I let the top players go, the bottom players fall even farther behind. So, like, where is that middle ground? And I guess my other big question, I guess, is like, you know, it was mentioned earlier talking about the Vroom commercial. Like, how do we as an industry respond, and how do we as individual dealers respond? Like, what are your guys' thoughts?
Kyle, do you want to take that, since you were actually on the offense a little bit with your own commercial?
Yeah, I can.
Which is awesome, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think there is a twofold nature that we have to take to go after that. One is that we need to do a better job of telling a story. Because as Chip said, there are a lot more dealers working toward innovation and changing their processes to adapt and change to an evolving digital world. And unfortunately, the mantra or the rhetoric within the marketing scheme is that we're still the same as we were as an industry 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. And we haven't done a good job at telling that story. We still have agencies and marketers throwing up 199 leases that can't be obtained except for a select few with 4,000 down or whatever. Tell a better story. We've got to do that on a local level. We have to tell a better story. And you've either got to hire an agency or hire people that can tell that story, both paid and organic, and do the work locally. But then I think we have to do things like we're doing right here. And we have to call NADA. We have to call the larger bodies that we work with. We have to call our OEMs as dealers, as vendors, to a higher standard. We have to commit to a higher standard instead of continually accepting a lower standard from them. And that's going to take work a lot on the dealer principal GM level, but also on the marketing level. I believe marketers saying, no, this is how we think we should tell the story, and this is going to be how we believe that you all tell the better story. This is going to take grassroots work to fully change. And then also offline conversations, and maybe it's threefold, that Jason, you, myself, Joe, Tim, in those cell calls, in those text messages, in those dinners, that we're telling, that we're encouraging other dealers and other groups to come along, to bring those along, to pull up the whole industry, to say that instead of just trying to push you down, that we're trying to bring everyone along, and that's going to be the better end result for all of us, instead of this war I win. It's a war together and we win, if that makes sense. Hope that answers your question. And moderator, hey, anything else on that?
Yeah. To add to that, I think what's happening is dealers have and for a long time, and they still do. Their advertising is all about selling VINs, selling a specific vehicle for a low price point. Vroom's ads were all about solving and selling an experience that solves a problem. So I mean, Tim said it earlier that David Kane said, you know, the experience is the new branding. That is very true here. The harsh reality, though, is there is not a better experience with Vroom. So what we did is, as soon as I saw that commercial, we went on the offense and created a playbook on what dealers can do. And I think it comes into two things. You said it very well, Kyle. It's messaging, but then it's strategy and tactics, and what can you actually do today? When Vroom was running their ad, they're getting a ton of organic search traffic, right? People are on their phones, they're Googling Vroom. At that point in time, dealers had the opportunity, and many did, to take away some of that traffic, to conquest, advertise. Vroom could not possibly show up for all those ads given the search volume at that given time. And it's still happening today because obviously there's residual effect from that commercial. So dealers need to bid on those things. They need to have their message out there, but they also need to back it up in a way that supersedes what Vroom is doing. And that's talking about local. That's talking about being a champion in their respective cities. My big thing is what happens on day eight. Who are you going to talk to? Yeah, sure. You can maybe get a vehicle delivered that's coming potentially from out of state. It could take 14 days to get to you. When you get it, the first 7 days are great. What happens on day eight? Are you going to be able to talk and have a conversation with a human being that you know can take care of you? And the answer is it's very doubtful, right? Like, it's hard enough to take back something to Target, let alone at vehicles. So it's this messaging that dealers need to get out there, to your exact point, Kyle, but it's how do you get it out? But regardless of all of that, the experience needs to be better than what Vroom is offering, and it can be. It's not the easy comparison between Uber and Amazon and all those things. Those companies really did solve a problem. Vroom is not. Dealers have better experiences today. Many of them do. Some of them still have work to do, though.
And service departments, quite frankly. I mean, I really believe, let's just, what I feel is the elephant in the room, a lot of us on this call spent time in the dealership. And as a salesperson, 25 years ago, you watch your general manager, your dealer principal go off to a 20 group, and somebody has an idea and they come back and they're all fired up and it lasts like 3 or 4 weeks, right? We polled the top 10, when I say DR dealers, but our top 10 dealers that are just have been uber successful with creating this experience. And we asked them multiple questions on why they were successful. And without getting into it all, but the one thing that every single one of them said is leadership buy-in. There has to be 100% baptism, and this is the way we're going to do it, and stay through and continue to create that experience, because nothing kills an experience or kills the momentum with, a few or three bad deals. That's like I said, no breath is better than bad breath. So I really think, again, what we are seeing, and I think others on the panel will see, the dealers that are, even with a single point of contact, with what Chip's doing and Kyle, what you're doing, there has to be leadership buy-in. I always tell people, absolutely. Your direction determines your destination. Man, just in life, we are where we are financially, with our spouses, with our careers. How many cars you sold last month, last year are direct results of decisions that you made months or years ago. So we've got to, as leadership, cast the vision, make sure that we stay focused, whatever that is, whatever company we use, cast the vision, say, this is the experience, we are going to make a difference, and then take the first step. And the dealers that do that is 100% success rate. It just doesn't fail. But we've got to do that and not waver from it.
Completely agree.
Kyle, I was going to ask you, from the Nelson Group, you guys have created such a demonstrably better one-person sales model that has tremendously upshifted the customer experience and produced a much different dealership environment. Can you tell us a little about your story, the journey that your group went on in Oklahoma and in Tennessee to grab the bull by the horns through leadership, as Tim was just saying, to really make a big change happen at your group?
Yeah, I'll start with this, and I mentioned this on a Clubhouse room this morning, but my good friend Tom Ryan says it like this, and I don't know if this is his equation or someone else's, but it's a quality plan plus organizational acceptance plus execution equals success. And I think that the really key player, if there could be a multiplier on there, is organizational acceptance, and it starts from the leadership. What I absolutely loved about the way that we went through this whole process, and to be fair, it was from the time we visited the first store that was doing what we wanted to do, it was a 7-month process to walk through. But that 7-month process was so rewarding. And what I'll never forget is that when we started to go train this, we started and the leadership, the absolute top leadership in our dealership was in those rooms. And not just that, but they were the first ones to role play. They were the first ones to memorize the word tracks, the first ones to go after that. And that told everyone in the room, this is valuable, this is important, and you can follow me into this new unknown. Of course, we're a single point of contact store now. We do not have finance managers. And I think that there's probably a time coming, and maybe sooner than we all thought, that that's a reality for a wide a gamut of the dealer base. It's not for everyone right now because there needs to be a culture shift and a process writing process, but it does take a long time. But the results on the other side are super rewarding. But you cannot have it without leadership buy-in. With that, I do want to get Zach has unmuted a few times. Zach, what question do you have for the panel?
Yeah, it was more of just following up with what Chip was saying when he asked that question, and would just love to add add to that if that's possible. And honestly, it goes along the lines of what you just said too, right? It's I feel like as GM leaders, right, we're so unfortunately short-sighted. We've got short-term goals and short-term targets, and it's hard. It's not easy, right? It's hard to make that sacrifice, that commitment. But, you know, we talk about how hard it is to connect with the customer today, but who takes care of the customer, right? How do we expect the whole experience to change if we don't figure out a way to connect with our employees better? And so, you know, the crazy statistic about over 60%+ of new hires coming into our industry, you know, are millennials. And for them, I think the hardest thing for leaders today is, you know, most of us, we figured it out, right? We didn't have the proper structure and had the investment and development. You know, we were just good at what we did, and it was hard work ethic and commitment to make it happen. And I think as leaders, unfortunately, and I'd love to get, you know, your guys' insight, but it's like, we can't expect the same thing out of our people that we expect of ourselves. And that was hard for me in my career. You know, I was the first one in, last one out. And it's like, it's hard to expect just absolute perfection. And I'm not saying perfection, but just all out commitment to the job, because right now they're motivated by something that's completely different than what we were motivated by. And so not only is it hard, again, connecting with the customer, but as the employees, we have a hard time connecting with employees because, like you just said, leadership. And so how often are we not only changing our process and implementing training process or training programs, but how often are we teaching leadership to our managers? Because most of them, you know, were brought up just because we're good salespeople. They weren't great sales managers. I mean, they weren't, you know, I mean, leaders, or they've never been taught how to train or lead a training. They were just great salespeople. And so we forget that we can't expect those people to lead our people if they've never been shown to lead themselves. And so I'd love to know your thoughts on that.
Joe, I'd like you to take a little bit of that. You know, you have a lot of passion for leading people and driving them to results.
I think that's a very, very good point. You know, you can purchase something or add something to your store, but if it's not adopted from the top down, you know, it's going to fail. I'd also, and what I've learned leading Dealer Inspire to where it's at today, which we have over 650 employees that have grown since 2013, where we have three. What I found is decisions
from a little garage.
Pretty amazing. Definitely, Brian. Decisions just from the top down don't necessarily always work either. Like what I like to do is go to my team now and tell them the problem we're trying to solve. So essentially give them the North Star and say, here's the problem. Tell me how to get there. And in every dealership, you're not going to have the right personnel to make every decision. But if you create something from the top down and you push it down, you're going to have resistance. That doesn't mean that you can't be a leader and you can't say, hey, it's time for change. Here's where I want to go. That's what a leader should do. But letting the team be flexible, getting into details of how to get there, is one of the most important lessons I've learned as a leader in business. Because what happens when they have buy-in? They're committed. They're accountable. They're part of it. What happens when you push something on them? They're pointing at it, saying why it doesn't work. So I would just make sure that your team is involved in this. Give them the North Star. Tell them that there's an opportunity to provide a better consumer experience, a better dealership experience, scalability, all of these things, but really get their input to make a difference.
Love it.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Thanks, Joe. Just as a note, this is our clubhouse surrounding NADA. This is the first of six. We've got incredible leaders in our industry, Chip Perry, Joe Chura, Tim Cox here on the moderator, and some incredible speakers as well. We're going to make sure that this is wrapped by the top of the hour, and we'll end this room. Of course, there may be people that that launch off after this into other rooms, but do yourself a favor. If you are in this room and aren't following the moderators and the speakers on the panel right now, do that, because we'll all be in a lot of the rooms over the next 3 days talking NADA and talking a lot around these topics that we're working through right now, driving our industry forward and doing some of the things that we would have been able to do would we have been in person, but we're getting to do it here on Clubhouse. And it's such an incredible platform that allows us and allows you to sit in the room with guys like Chip and Joe and Tim and Jonathan and Brian that are leading our industry forward and doing it with humility and intelligence and wisdom. So follow the people in the room, follow the people even around you as you scroll down, and let's pursue excellence in our industry. So with that said, I want to get to Chris, has been patiently waiting. We'll get Chris, and then we'll move to Jonathan, Sandy, and Brian. Chad is up here because he is helping me record and work through these sessions. But if you will, kind of keep it somewhat brief. If you do have a question, ask it to the panel, and we'll take a panelist at a time for those questions. If you do have a comment, if you will, keep it brief. That way we can respect everyone's time here today on this Tuesday. Chris, go ahead.
Thanks, Kyle. Chip, my comment and question was for you. I worked for a dealer group here in Dallas for some years that adopted that single point sales process, which was very successful. It was a change for us, obviously, in sales. We were used to, you know, waiting on the pavement, getting a lead, pushing them off to finance, and doing that kind of cycle over and over and over again. But we grew really strong relationships with clients. We were able to, like you said, sell more finance products and had a higher penetration and all those great things that come along with just quality relationships with the people that you're working with. But so I'm on board for what you're doing. It's great for this industry. But my question to you is how do you adopt this change at scale? Clearly, this is something that we need to adopt. All these dealers across the nation need to get to this sort of single point sales process to grow the relationships with the people that they're working with. But from your seat, how do you see this kind of scaling out across the nation and really affecting change in the way that we do business currently?
Thank you for the question, Chris. Sounds like you guys made great progress at your store using a one-person sales model to produce better customer experience and better financial results for the dealership. And when you did that, you probably saw a lot of the challenges involved, which are organizational inside the store, training, a number of changes in pay plans need to be made, roles and responsibilities need to be redefined. And then also, very importantly, technology needs to be an assister rather than an inhibitor. I think to scale this idea, which is clearly needed, clearly desired by many dealers, but somewhat cautiously approached because of the factors we described earlier, where when things are working so well and things aren't broke, why fix it? But we are teetering on the edge of, I think, you know, a significant sort of tipping point of the need for massive, rapid experiential change at the retail level in our industry in order for the industry to preserve its health over the medium to long term. So I think that to scale this, there needs to be many examples of success that start to present themselves to the industry and create conversation around. At A to Z, we're fortunate to have a number of clients like Nelson, Kyle's group, who have had great success. And what they've discovered is that and they need enabling technology along with an implementation roadmap and training support to help rapid adoption and successful implementation of this idea. Technology is really important here because today there's so many touch points, so many screens, so much complexity, and all that needs to be made invisible. That needs to be made invisible in a simple one screen, one application process. And that's what we've been working hard on here in Denver for a few years. And the folks before I even arrived last summer, it made great progress to the point now where clients are able to execute transactions with 50% the time needed and compared to the traditional approach. But the technology needs to be very sensitively designed. It needs to be have all of the nuances around finance and F&I properly incorporated so that profit can be preserved while customer satisfaction is being generated. And that balancing act is what I think good technology does. That's what we're really focused on here. So I think that we're going to see over the next several months more and more dealers kind of leaning in, beginning to experiment. Groups will take a few stores and put them on this model. And then as more positive experience becomes known, it'll become a movement. It's not a movement yet. Today it's got some green shoots, I would call it. There's some green shoots sprouting across America right now, where dealers have taken the bull by the horns, have reinvented retail, modernized it, simplified it while keeping it profitable. Challenging all of the traditional mindsets and ways of doing business along the way. It's a wonderful thing to see when it blossoms at a dealership. So scaling it is what it's all about now. I think it'll require a number of players. There's a few of us who are advocating and providing the technology tools and services needed to help dealers apply these ideas, adopt them, make them successful. But it's going to take a little bit more momentum of the snowball going down the hill before it becomes a full movement. But a really great question, Chris.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chip. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks, Chip, for that. I agree. And your panelists today are all in that forward momentum from a technology perspective. And I think you'll see each of them leading teams that are driving toward not just technology, but also process innovation. Jonathan.
Yeah, hey, my friend, I appreciate this. I'd like to try to see if I can offer a different perspective. And this is, of course, coming from traveling around and being in, by now, thousands of stores. I feel like the real advantage of the systems being espoused right now is that there's an adoption of a process that is designed specifically with an experience and in mind. But it's the adoption that actually makes it, I think, more successful. Let me give you an example of that or metaphor. I've been to restaurants where you walk in and you actually, it's a self-serve experience. You walk in, you go grab your plate, you go grab your food. And in some cases, it's raw food. You sit in front of a grill that's in the center of the table and you cook your own food. And you basically do everything yourself. Highly successful restaurant. I've been in restaurants where you go in, you get greeted, you sit down, you tell the waiter goes, tells the chef then goes, prepares the food, waiter brings it back. There's a runner between them getting drinks, highly successful models. I think that when we look at the model of the one person, one price, one, flow deal, I think that what makes it so successful, in my opinion, is not that it's such a great model by itself. I think that what it is it's executed consistently because of the necessity of it. It's a burn your ship model. You can't play with it. You have to do it. You have to own it. And so stores that have more of a traditional model, but that they go at it with the same gusto of I'm going to own this. I'm going to own our experience while doing it during this model have wonderful success. I have stores that are what you might call traditional dealership models, highly successful, some of the most profitable and most successful, highest volume in their markets, crushing it. And they're doing it using what you'd call the traditional model. Now, so I just want to say, I think that the success truly comes ultimately when you start with how do we create a wonderful experience within the model that we have, but how do we get everybody moving in that direction? It's the buy-in. And the thing about the one price or the one person model is it eliminates fluctuations in the system. It eliminates the fact you can't have the variance that you can in other models that are normalized. So my question, if I can ask to Chip or Joe or Kyle, yourself, is do you have a case study? Because I think I'd like to study this and I'd like to explore it, because I'm just an advocate of whatever the dealer wants as far as the vision. But do you have one specifically where you take the number one store in the market, not a broken store, not a struggling store, where do you have yet a store that says, we're number one, here's our metrics, and from number one the old way, we're now number one this way? I'm just curious, is there that conversion yet story? I'd love to explore that. I'd love to understand it from that perspective.
I know I don't personally have a specific example, although I know that, and maybe not the number one store, but some extremely successful stores that have transitioned, stores within the Walser Automotive Group, the Holler Group, and then in Canada, and I'm losing the name, I apologize, large Highline Group up there that's done that, and if anyone can ring my bell there. And Chip may have an example as well.
Yes, Kyle. So Jonathan, you're making a very good point that there's multiple ways to skin the cat, and there can be traditional dealerships that do fabulously well. At the same time, they're optimizing within a system that has its obvious limitations in terms of the customer experience, the time that it's required through TOs and waiting for F&I. Despite the best intentions of the best dealer, it's still not an optimum experience. So the dealers that have embraced this one-person sales model have decided to break the china, burn the boats, move forward, and embrace the future with a much different approach. That requires a lot of change within the store, both organizationally and with their tech tools. So I think the examples that you're seeking are out there. Within the Shomp organization in Denver, the Shomp Subaru store was a strong performing store, very traditional store. It was in the top 10 in America. It became number one in the world after it adopted a one person sales model. It raised front end grosses, and it improved back end, and volume dramatically increased. The Motorworks organization in near Chicago has had fabulous results at their BMW store. It was already strong performing. So we do have case studies. They're on our website. We have short form versions there. We have long form versions available on request. Be happy to share those with you, Jonathan. So I think you're right that there needs to be sparks of inspiration that are story driven, that are rooted in reality, that capture people's attention, that create motivation and desire to really execute real change. That's what we're looking for, dealers who have that kind of mindset. We're fortunate to have a number of them that we're serving today and onboarding as we speak. But John, we'd love to talk to you sometime about your experience about this movement and where you see it going.
Yeah, I would love to have that conversation with you as well, Chip. And my email address, by the way, is in my bio, if it's possible, if you're comfortable to send me an email with any of that. I'm just a lover of new ways of thinking and new ways of doing business, so I'm very interested.
Love to do that. Thank you, John.
Sandy, let's, if you can, keep it somewhat brief so that way we can honor everyone's time.
I'm going to keep it to about 30 seconds, buddy. First of all, great commentary from across the panel. I would say this to you, when we talk about changing, we have to talk about changing the messaging internally with our teams. The goal ultimately or the purpose should be what serves to drive clarity in terms of what we're doing. So when I think about trying to change anything, technology can be changed and process can be changed, I think sometimes far more easily than behavior can be changed. And so if you can get
crystal clear in terms of creating a process and an experience that puts the customer in a position to make the very best decision possible for them with as little pain or completely eliminate the pain, you're going to get somewhere. I think it was Joe that said, top down is tough because you usually face headwind resistance. I love top down, bottom up, meet in the middle, where we're finding hidden leaders that have leadership skills and influence in the organization, not based on title, but based on real action and a commitment to get something special done. So we don't talk about change. We talk about getting something special and something innovative done. And so I appreciate the opportunity to talk today.
Sandy, I you said one word there that we think about a lot, and that, you know, when I talk about, you know, admiring Chip and Joe on this panel, there's one thing that they hold in common is they serve their people. You said the word serve. I think when we talk about leadership from the top down, I think the biggest word of a lot of successful leaders is humility. Understanding that, you know, somebody else said, you know, we in the car business, you know, we promote people because they're a good salesperson, and then we put them on the desk and they've never led anybody. It takes, you know, managing a car deal, a lot of people can do. Not many people can be a leader, but all of these changes, all of these new technologies, all of these adoptions, when that leader is taking the time to serve and to humbly spend time with a receptionist, hey, and pour into them their vision, and what do you say? I had the privilege to be in on the Lexus back in 2007, had the Innovation Council. Some of you that were in the Lexus business back then, you remember that. And their thing, which I've adopted, is no one's smarter than everyone, because the custodian and the technician and the receptionist, they all see things differently and they know things that you don't know. So the leaders that come in every day, humble, loving their people, truly serving their people, when you have that type of atmosphere at your dealership, that's when you get buy-in, that's when you get change, and that's when you get everybody on the boat wanting to follow you. Because someone once said, when your soldiers' bellies are full and their feet are dry, they'll fight for you. So I've seen it time and time again. I love that word, serve. And I think that and serving with humility, but conviction, is the key to everything that we're talking about.
Tim, thanks so much. Yeah, Joe.
I was going to say, and Tim, you also do a great job with that. Thank you for the compliments, but you're a fantastic example of someone that serves in that way. Just wanted to point that and return that compliment, because it's very true.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you so much. And just an encouragement for everyone in the room. You just heard Tim and you heard Sandy and you've heard everyone talk about leadership. The reality is that we have dealer principals, we have CEOs of companies, we have salespeople, we have different people across the dealership in this room right now. Every single person in this room right now is a leader. You have the capacity to lead out in the given role that you're in. And you're in automotive for a reason. And we need you in automotive. And we need you to just stay in automotive and continue to push the people around you, above and below you, to further this innovation that we're talking about. It might be single point of contact sales. It might be a process driven toward digital retailing. It might be overcoming an impressive challenge that happened in 2020. Whatever it is, you have the capacity to be a leader in our industry. You have the capacity to call other people to our industry, a diverse set of people that we would have never expected 10 years to be a part of our industry, that are going to take it in the franchise OEM side to incredible heights. We are going to beat the things that come up against us, and we are going to be an industry that's attractional for both new employees, new people to start career paths and grow career paths, and customers. And we are a customer-driven industry. I want to thank so much Chip, Joe, Tim, all the speakers that were on today. It was just an incredible. I'm encouraged. I took so many notes already. For everyone in the room, we will have a room again at 4 p.m. Eastern. We will have the likes of George Nenny, Glenn Pash, Whit Nora, David Spizak, and Steve Rossler in that room. I'm so excited to share that with you. please mark that on your calendars. You can go to the link in my bio. It's NADA2021.club. That's NADA2021.club. And we'll have that this afternoon. I'll also be providing daily recaps on my blog on that site at the end of the day if you missed anything. And this session was recorded and will be available on Contagious Podcast. You can find that wherever your podcasts are. We're going to go ahead and wrap this room. I thank you for staying in a little extra longer, but I think it was valuable, and I hope you got value out of this room today. Again, thanks, Chip, Joe, Tim. Such a blessing to be in the room with you.
Great job, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle. Wonderful work.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed that. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and the innovation and the insights that happened on Clubhouse. As always, please like, share, comment, give this to those in your workplaces or friends or family that may be encouraged by it. And what we need from you is for you to be a part of this conversation, to have this conversation with more people and not less. We need more voices and not less in our industry pushing forward toward innovation, and that includes you. So as you go forward, as you listen to this, as you think about this, make sure you don't have just internal dialogue. Have conversations with more people so that we can provide an innovative atmosphere where more people want to become a part of it and work in the industry as well as do business with us. Thanks for listening to Contagious Podcast.